T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
You've got the radio turned on in your car. You're just driving along, thinking you're beating rushes at 11 a.m.
You're driving along, and all of a sudden the kids are yelling from the backseat, "I gotta go to the bathroom, Daddy! Not now, damn it!"
Sports Talk Saturday.
Ugh. Not middle it gets. Okay.
I can't stop! Oh. Help! There's a cliff! Oh. And your family's screaming, "Oh my God, we're burning alive!"
on WGR. Good morning. It's 11:03, Sports Talk Saturday, fully underway. Derek Kramer on the, we'll call him the PA announcements before school, getting you your scores.
The morning announcements.
The morning announcements, yeah. from Derek Kramer. I did those in high school, by the way.
Did you?
I did. It was my first real broadcasting experience.
And did anyone take snippets of that and make you look like an ass?
Nobody did that.
We'll find them. Luckily, I had friends
back in the day that were nice.
What's nice?
Anyways.
That's what friends are for, to make fun of each other.
Anyways, Nate Geary here. Joe DiBiase joins me in studio to co-host today. We've got kind of a full docket, only a couple of guests. Guests that you would know. Brian Koziel is going to join us at noon. The host of Tee to Greens in the Morning had their two-hour Masters episode this morning. If you missed that, you can go to WGR550.com, hit the on-demand audio, listen there. And Pat Mellicaro will join us at 12:30, the play-by-play announcer for the Buffalo Bisons, as the Bisons get underway for this season, which started like a week and a half ago.
Last week?
Yeah, about 10 days ago.
Last weekend, maybe.
You wouldn't notice by looking outside that it was baseball season, but it is. And today is actually not a bad day. It's sunny.
Were you being sarcastic there? Because it's like sunny and 60.
So I have golfed 3 times already this year.
Oh, it's so jealous. It must have been really muddy, though.
To be honest with you, I played at Buffalo Tournament Club on Tuesday.
Okay.
Tuesday morning.
Like it? Nice course.
I woke up very early. I was up at like 5:45, and I went outside, and it was like warm enough. I was like,
what's
okay.
What's warm enough for you? Like, what's the minimum temperature to golf?
32. I'll play in 33, 34. I have already.
Maybe we'll bring this up with Brian again. We talked to him about this, and I think his was you golf. Your minimum temperature is your age. So okay. For me, that'd be 23, which seems really cold.
I would say this. Most people's minimum temperature is probably, if you need, I think the threshold here is whether or not you need hand warmers to play.
Ooh.
But I'll tell you, the first 2 rounds of the year, I used hand warmers, and they kept me warm.
2 gloves?
I normally do is I have like this cotton long sleeve T-shirt. Okay. Wear the cotton long sleeve, then I'll throw a hoodie over that, golf shirt, and then I've got like one of these things,
like a windbreaker jacket.
You can tell by the noise.
A windbreaker jacket, right?
So I've got this like golf windbreaker jacket. Usually, if it goes well, by the 6th or 7th hole, that first layer's coming off, and I've got the T-shirt, hoodie, and long sleeve that I'm wearing. Well, not the T-shirt, but the golf shirt. You know,
I like golfing with a hoodie. I don't know. It's like a mental thing, I know, but every time I'm wearing a hoodie and it's a little cold out, I always feel better about my game. Like, I feel like I'm fighting the elements and I'm out here.
I accidentally found this combination because
it feels like more of an accomplishment when you par in 50 degrees
that's
and
true.
Cloudy and windy than if you par
and
it's
an aerated green where it's
right.
Like, you know, where the ball is
right.
Going, it's not going straight. But no, I put my first 2 rounds of the year. First of all, I think my first round would have been like March 25th,
wow.
Like the first day that golf courses opened, and actually not golf courses, just one. Terry Hills was the only one open. So I drove out to Batavia, went to Terry Hills, played there, and quite honestly, it was not wet at all. The thing was, I think most of the ground was still frozen solid because a couple of my drives, like the first hit looked like it hit concrete. It bounced like 4 feet in the air.
You're hitting 400 bangers off the
right,
tee.
Exactly. And then I played there again, and it was a little dewy. You know, like it was early in the morning. It was 7:15, so it was still kind of wet, but only because of the dew the night before. Mm. And then once the sun came out, it was 9:10. Once I got to the 10th hole. It was pretty dry, and I was fine. And then Tuesday I went to Buffalo Tournament Club, and it was wet. And it was 30 mile per hour winds for a period. And it was like, it was fine when I woke up. It was sunny-ish. The sun was rising. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go out today. So I first went to Diamond Hawk, went into the parking lot. There was no one there. I knocked on the door. That's how desperate I was to play at Diamond Hawk. So I'm like, all right, you know, I'll just go down the street. I'll just go to Buffalo Tournament Club. So I went down to Buffalo Tournament Club. They were open. They were letting carts out. So I'm like, perfect. Then all of a sudden, these really dark, ominous clouds came through. And I'm like, and then the wind starts picking up really heavily.
That just sounds like golf on hard mode. You should just do it.
And so I walked in, and the pro was like, so, you know, 1, 2, 6, 7, 10, 11, and 13 are really wet. And I was like, well, which ones are dry? Well, I mean, none are dry, but just make sure you stay, you know, keep the cart on the path. I was like, okay, it's fine. So I'm getting out. First hole, I pulled it right on my drive. And first of all, I line up, and there's the people that are working at the golf course are setting up the ropes of where the tee boxes are. There are no actual like tee markers so that I know where to tee off.
I asked
the two guys, I was like, you know, what do I do? He's like, anywhere you want, brother. And I was like,
wow.
All right, well, I guess I'll tee off right here. So I teed off, went a little right, and didn't even see a bounce. And it's way off to the right, car paths to the left. So I decided, it's a morning ball. It's a breakfast ball. So I'm just going to drop one right here next to the cart path so I don't have to go venture off into the swamp. Well, boom, hit a great shot. I ended up parring.
At that point, like, why? I don't even want any part of any
dude,
of that.
Dude, listen,
like,
Joe.
It doesn't even sound like golf to me.
It was not fun. Like, after one, like, I got done with one really quick. There was a group of four that we were the only five people on the course. And after I ended up, and literally, I was just one hand putting. Like, I just was like, get me off the greens. Mm. By the time I got to, like, the 10th, 11th hole, the wind started to die down. The sun came out. So it was okay. But I'll tell you what, really, from hole one on, the entire time I'm thinking to myself, why did I do this? Like, why did I come out here today to do this to myself? I'm not enjoying what I'm doing. But there was a certain point when the wind was literally like gusts of 40 miles per hour. And I'm wearing my hoodie with the hood up, which, let me just tell you, is a very, like, I like wearing the hoodie too, but I would never put the hood over my head, ever.
No, of course not.
It's just a weird feeling while you're swinging. I had the hood up with all three or four layers on, the hand warmers, and I'm literally,
I think,
like,
when,
at the green.
When you reach that point, it's too cold to
golf. I thought about a rain check. I did. I really thought about a rain check. But I was like, you know, let's just get through this. Like, I'm not going to, I was like, I literally, this is what happened. I looked at the weather on my phone. I pulled up the weather app on my phone, and I saw rain for the next, like, six or seven straight days. And I'm like, this is the time I'm out right now. I may not get out for another 14 days.
But that's just what, like, that's your environment. You got to recognize that, like, that's the thing. Like, it's Buffalo. You're not really going to get consistent golf in until May.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Which it sucks.
It's frustrating because you got the Masters on this week, and you're just looking at Augusta, and it makes you want to golf.
You get the
beautiful
itch.
Course you've ever seen in your life. And then you look outside and, like, oh, it's sunny out here, but It's fool's gold.
It's absolutely fool's gold.
Like, I'm not touching any golf course, I think, until at least mid-April, and that's if the weather has been solid for 2 weeks in a row.
The problem is this rain we've been getting is just like a soaking, nasty rain. Like, it's just all day. It's not very hard.
Is there another kind of rain?
What? There's the quick rain, hard rain, downpour rain, but this is a real soaking,
potential
thorough
tornado rain.
Yes.
This is more of a thorough rain.
So it's unfortunate. But for those people who are champing, by the way, which is...
No, what? Chomping.
It's chomping.
It's champing.
It's chomping. Are we doing
I agree.
Continue.
I agree with you guys. That, but my point is, I'm agreeing with you, but the other day when I said chomping on the bit of Twitter, I got... like 20 people. It's champing.
It's the internet. You know you can't trust
it's
that.
It's champing.
It's the internet. You know you can't trust that.
Anyways, we'll talk some more Masters in the next hour when Brian Koziel joins us. at noon. So we'll get through some of the tee times. There are some great pairings going into the weekend, and obviously led by Tiger Woods and Ian Poulter, which I think is kind of a low-key pairing because, if I'm not mistaken, those two don't like each other very much. Ian Poulter kind of rubs a lot of golfers the wrong way, and I'm pretty sure there at one point was a feud between the two.
Are you sure it was them? I know Sergio and Tiger
don't get along for sure. But I'm pretty sure that at one point, we'll ask.
I can't remember anything, but I would not be surprised.
Ian Poulter is not a really well-liked golfer.
Yeah. He's a bit of a quirky character.
He is. He wears that weird Titleist visor.
The weird pants.
Yeah.
Although he's kind of backed off that a little bit in recent years. Like, he used to wear, he had pants that was just the British flag.
Yeah.
Like, he was a crazy guy.
He was a lot. But the first three pair, well, I should say the last three pairings to me this week are just so solid this weekend. Jason Day, Francisco Molinari, your leader grouping at the top. I love that pairing. Adam Scott, Brooks Koepka, who at this point I really feel is probably like the leader in the clubhouse, right? I feel like Koepka is probably the guy.
I don't know. Molinari, though, man, he's playing like the last 12 months.
And just might be to be honest, I don't want to say came out of nowhere, but he really kind of came out of nowhere to be as.
Molinari?
Yeah.
He was a guy.
Right. But then all of a sudden now he's an elite level player, top 15, top 10 player in the world. The third pairing is maybe the most interesting, which is Louis Oosthuizen and Dustin Johnson, because Oosthuizen is constantly talked about as one of the guys who has like the prettiest swing in the pros. Like just a very fluent, wonderful, beautiful swing that you wish you could emulate, but whatever reason you can't. And obviously Dustin Johnson, one of the top players in the world. That's going to be a good one. And then obviously with the Poulter. And I was kind of hoping Tiger Woods and John Rahm are going to get to get paired up again, or Phil, just because of how bad that Thanksgiving twosome of between Phil and Tiger was. I think we needed a little redemption as a society over that. But
so quickly, who do you think is the favorite at this point to win the Masters?
I think it's got to be Brooks Koepka.
Now,
but I wouldn't rule out Rory.
Just searching it, Koepka is the favorite that I see with Dustin Johnson.
I really would not. Want to write off Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy.
Always write off Ricky Fowler.
I know Rory's basically been playing against himself this week because I was watching his round yesterday where he eagles, I think, 5, and he had just some of the best shots you'll see all day, and then he just had some of the most puzzling shots you've seen all day.
So one sports book lists Tiger Woods as the favorite to win the Masters.
Really?
It's 6-1. With Dustin Johnson also at 6-1. Wow. I think that's one of those things, partially like so many people bet Tiger, that pushes him forward higher up. But Tiger is the favorite going into
that's
Saturday.
Pretty awesome.
I mean, at least he is in it. That makes it interesting. Like, he not just in it, like where he's like, oh, 3 shots back. If he makes a run, then like maybe we could see him play into contention on Sunday. But like, no, he's 1 back. Like, he's right in the thick of it.
This is fun, though. Yeah. Like, this is kind of, if you're our age, I think maybe this is what makes it most unique, is guys like Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, John Rahm. Like, these guys that came up were all most likely idolizing Tiger Woods. And this is the first time in a major going into the weekend where it's not Tiger having to put together a miraculous 7-under Saturday to be in the conversation on Sunday. This is Tiger's one shot off the lead after playing 2 rounds where listen, and I was texting with Brian Colsey about this yesterday. If Tiger hits 3 of those under 10-foot putts that he missed, he's in the lead by 2 or 3 strokes.
Yep.
Like, he's had that type of round on day. I mean, that 70 could have easily been a 67, and the 68 he shot yesterday could have easily been a 66. So you're talking about a guy that could be close to 8-9 under had he hit the shots he should have hit. And one of the things they were talking about in the broadcast yesterday that I thought was spot on is even when he hasn't been on with his driver, which I think yesterday he hit 7 of 14 fairways, even the fairways he wasn't hitting and the bad shots that he was hitting, like off to the left or off to the right, where it looks like, holy cow, he's going to have to just punch and lay up and hope to get on the green close to you know, up and down par. He hits an unbelievable second shot, gets it within 10 feet, and then birdies. It's just
what 14.
He's doing.
Over the trees.
What he's doing right now with his driver is what he has not done in years with his driver, which is be consistent down the middle and be a 315-yard drive. And he was all week, Thursday and Friday, right with John Rahm, driving. And John Rahm's one of the biggest hitters on tour. He's a big boy. He smokes the ball. And Tiger was right there. The only thing that could really hold Tiger back are these putts under 10 feet. Mm-hmm. I think within 10 feet, he is 140th on tour, putting from within 10 feet, which is not good. And they kept mentioning it when he was missing those close birdie putts and ended up, you know, kind of parring, how the numbers really don't lie when you're talking about Tiger. Is the putting within 10 feet has been his bugaboo. But he hit a couple of really impressive long 20 plus foot putts, especially yesterday. Those two birdies that he hit were really long, really great putts from him. To me, if he can hit one or two of more of those within 10 foot putts this weekend, he's got a really good chance of winning. The thing that I worry about is a guy like Brooks Koepka or Bryson DeChambeau, who we saw on Thursday, go on these tears. Right, DeChambeau was like 7 under, yeah, and then
he
blew it. Yeah, he
you
had like was three
yesterday?
Or four over yesterday.
He's still right there.
He's still right there, though. Right, I mean, he was 7 under. I think he went 4 over yesterday.
He didn't just go 4 over. He went 4 over. I think in a 5-hole stretch.
Yeah,
like,
he really fell apart. Yeah, and one of the things that this I made like maybe the most interesting about this group of younger guys at the top is like, and for whatever reason, I keep going back to thinking like I'm super excited about a potential Sunday pairing. Like, what is your ideal Sunday pairing at the top? For me, it's as hard, and I don't know how realistic it is, because Rory would have to have a 5-under day today for this to happen. But
yeah, I don't
for
think
me,
realistic.
For me, the top four, like if your last two groupings are Ricky Fowler and Tiger Woods, and then DJ and Rory, holy cow, like that's to me right there, that is ideal central. That is what, if you're the PGA, and what you want representing the Sunday at the Masters, the 83rd Masters, that is like, to me, your ideal group, your two twosomes right there going into the final day on Sunday. Like, that to me is your best case scenario.
I think, for me personally, it's pretty easy, because when I'm just looking at the guys that are 4 under and better right now that are within 3 shots of the lead, I think there's 4 guys that stick out as the biggest stars in that group. Koepka, Tiger, Dustin Johnson, and Phil is still hanging around. I mean, Phil's at 4 under.
Yeah.
Like, I think if I'm talking ideal final pairings going to Sunday, like, what will get the Masters the best ratings on Sunday? I mean, a Phil-Tiger final pairing has never really happened at a major where they've both been in serious contention, or the final group. So I'd like to see that, just to be that, and if not, throw Koepka and Dustin Johnson in the mix. Like, those would be the 4 guys I'd want in it the most. But there's a lot of other names in there that are, like, names. Like, they're guys. Like, Adam Scott's been around. You know who he
right.
is. Molinari. Schauffele is becoming a name. John Rahm. Poulter. So, to me, I would go with those 4 guys. I just can't see...
You know
the
who
bigger
else?
Stars, like you just mentioned, like, they're a little further down. Like, I just can't see them making that run.
You know who else is
sneaky? McIlroy has looked bad in the first couple of days.
Who's very sneaky that had a really good 2018? Webb Simpson. Like, he's a guy that I think. Yeah, he's a guy that could, has a good Saturday, could be right in it. But,
oh, Justin Thomas is sitting at 3 under. I haven't noticed him in this tournament.
Yeah, neither have I. I think what I loved about some of the featured groups on Saturday and Sunday with the CBS.com app, mm-hmm. CBS Sports app, is I really did like the Lee-Rahm-Tiger pairing, but they also had the DJ. No, it was Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, and who was the other one?
I don't know. Tom Watson.
No. Well, I mean, what a name.
Bernard Langer.
By the way, so I just looked up on golfnewsnet.com. The
great site.
Saturday pin placements are going to be really difficult. Like, first of all, the Friday pin placements were really difficult. There was one hole that I'm thinking of in particular that Tiger ended up saving par on, where his second shot was in the woods, then his first shot was in the woods, second shot way over the green. Then he duffs the chip and puts it, like, doesn't even get to the green, and then puts it within, 2 feet and taps in for par. But he, like, they were talking, basically an impossible shot for him to chip onto the green because there was water behind it, and where the hole was basically 15 feet of green. Like, you had no room. And today, they're saying the pin placements could be the toughest pin placements all week. And even though, for the most part, you think that Sunday has the most difficult pin placements a lot of times, and on this Masters, some of the pin placements, they just look almost like impossible, especially when you were like listening after I was watching Masters After Dark or whatever it was, like on where they were
Masters
talking
After Dark.
If that's not the name of the show, it should be. They should.
There should be
if
a
not,
show called
could,
Masters After
we
Dark.
We could technically make a show. Masters
we could.
After
we'll
Dark.
Go down to Augusta.
Yeah.
Lights
maybe just
off.
Podcast.
I'm in.
Masters After Dark, and like maybe get.
See if we can find any golfers that are like out on the town.
Right.
Maybe some
maybe
guys
have had
got
a couple.
Cut.
Maybe have had a couple.
Maybe some guys that got cut.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking at.
Masters
you got to find
Dark.
The guys that got cut. And get them a Fred
okay,
Couples.
First of all, I'm glad that you brought this up. I don't know why this made. Did you see Zach Johnson's shot? Did you see that duff?
I mean, can I call it a shot? I mean,
did you see that duff?
It's a practice. It was
Zach Johnson yeah. is everyone else. Like he is. That is me on a Sunday morning, 6:45, teeing off at the first hole.
Mm-hmm.
But
even I
mind,
feel like I rarely ever do that.
Right.
I mean, I've done it, but
what blows my mind about it is
crazy.
If you watch the video. He is very clearly not lined up on the ball.
No.
Like, the
not.
Ball is roughly an inch away from the head of his club.
Yep.
He takes a full... Like, he took a regular swing. That was not a practice swing. That I've seen practice swings. That is not a practice swing.
I mean...
I truly think...
Are we
going to
question his motivations
I think he
now?
Had a total brain... I think he had a total brain fart meltdown, is what I think. I think I don't know where his head was in that instance, but like that is a full swing. That's a full swing that he took. And he hit it with like I don't even know what he did for it to go like 3 feet to the left. I don't even know how you could hit that ball for it to do what it did.
I feel like some guys just maybe like some guys will take like full swings for their practice swing, right?
The way that he postured afterwards, like that was a swing. That was a swing.
You got me thinking about this now.
I'm not saying conspiracy. I'm not saying that it was like he did it and he was like, oh, it was an accident. I truly think it was an accident. I just think that he was teeing off is what I think.
His swing is weird too, though. No, I don't think so.
I'm still saying
it's a practice swing.
It just, to me,
it's a practice swing.
It was awkward as hell. It was a super awkward situation if you were watching it live, which I don't think he was part of a featured group, so I don't know if it was actually live, but they cut to it right away when I was watching the featured group, and I was like, he tried to hit that ball. That is a swing, my friend. That's a swing.
I don't know, man. I'm watching it frame by frame now.
I don't think you could watch it frame by frame and see that. I think you feel like you might be right,
but... There's no way.
There's no
motive behind it that would make that into a positive.
And also, I don't think it was intentional. I really don't. I just think for whatever reason, he did not line up, and then he just brain farted. Like, listen, I mean, that probably... Think about all the things running through these guys' mind on the tee box at the Masters.
No, this is a practice swing.
I don't know, dude.
It's absolutely a practice swing. I just watched him tee it up. If you watch him tee it up and then step back and do it, like, it's a practice swing. Definitely. My bigger question is, how is that not a one-stroke penalty?
The new rules. The new rules are, first of all, I wanted to talk about this too. Is it just me or is it super weird watching guys putt, like a 5 foot putt with the flag in the hole?
Yeah, it's a little weird.
That's weird to me. It's weird to look at. The first, and now you can ground the club in a sand trap? That's weird.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that one. The flag one's a little weird. I get the logic behind it.
Yeah.
It's like it serves as a backboard, but unless you hit the line perfect, that doesn't really come to fruition. If you're even off by a little bit,
I think it maybe
and
hurts
you gun
more.
It past
yeah.
the hole, right? It's going to hit the pin
and
it's going to
go
fly
wherever.
Off to the left.
Yeah.
So, I don't really get why anyone's. I get the logic behind it, but to me, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense why anybody's doing that. You watching the Masters more than any other sport this weekend?
Yeah,
this is like one of the best weekends for sports of the year.
There's no question about like the eliteness of this weekend. And interestingly enough, which I hope we have time to talk about the NBA playoffs because I think that there are a couple really good, interesting first round matchups.
There's also a couple that are not interesting
not
at
good
all.
At all. Like to me, that Magic Toronto series not really interesting at all.
Warriors,
even people,
Clippers,
somebody
sweep.
On ESPN picked the Magic to win that series. By the way, I don't know.
Takes guts,
but. Respect I will it. Say, if you're looking at one upset series before we go to break here, what do you think your one upset series is?
Jazz over the Rockets.
Would you call that an upset?
I would. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a
4-5?
It's a 5 over a 4,
yeah.
But I bet if you looked at betting odds, it's a bigger upset than a lot of other ones. Like, and nobody's expecting the Jazz to beat the Rockets.
Do you want to know what mine one is? Do you know what my upset
it's
alert?
The Clippers over the Warriors.
No, not a shot.
In four.
Not a shot.
What is this, Tampa-Columbus?
Right. And in the NHL, that would be possible.
Especially with the injury to Embiid, the Nets are a sneaky, sneaky team.
No, the Sixers' fourth best player would be the Nets' best player.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. They have four players better than the Nets' best player.
They play good team ball. You know what? And here's my thing.
It's the playoffs.
The other night, D-Wade's last game in Brooklyn, yep, and Melo and CP3 and LeBron were there. First of all, Brooklyn messed up big time by not picking up Carmelo Anthony before the trade deadline.
Nobody messed up enough.
No, that's the one team that could have used another shooter. But I think D'Angelo Russell is a really good player. And
Melo's not really a shooter, though. Melo's like a spot-up ISO player, like at the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
But like, he's not a three-point. Like, he shoots three-pointers, but he's not like an amazing three-point shooter.
I'd like to roll it back to 2015 and get 2014 or 2015.
5 years ago.
And give you the New York Knicks versus Chicago Bulls, where Carmelo went off for like 50 and just kept spotting up from like six steps out from three and whopping, and then he had the game winner at the end.
It was 5 years ago.
Doesn't matter.
What do you mean doesn't matter?
Doesn't matter.
He was in his 20s probably.
No, he was probably 30.
How old do you think Carmelo Anthony is?
He's 34.
Think about it. LeBron is 34, and
Melo's 35. 35 or 36, Melo is.
He's 34.
Okay. So LeBron's 32.
So congrats. He was in his 20s.
In 2015? He was 30. Whatever. Yeah. We're the semantics. But come on.
He's 30. That's what I'm saying.
This is a terrible take. All right, 803-0-550. It's a terrible take that nobody cares about.
1-888-552-550. I will go to my deathbed defending Carmelo Anthony.
This is an odd hill to die on.
I will die on the Carmelo Anthony hill. No problem.
He sucks.
We're going to talk a little NHL next. A lot of really interesting storylines starting already. It's sort of a weird year for the NHL playoffs. I think things are going to happen that we didn't really at all expect. I can tell you, things are happening in Columbus that nobody expected them down 3-0 in the first period for them to go 9-1. It's been an unbelievable run for Columbus. 803-0551, 888-552-550. Sports Talk Saturday continues on here next on WGR.
Yeah, no, they're probably rooming together in Pittsburgh. So, no, they were really good. I thought Barzy and Ebbs, they're attacking right now. They're skating so well. They're playing off each other. I thought Ebbs' goal was fantastic. He attacked space there, and that was obviously a huge goal for us.
Former Edmonton players just doing their thing all over the place. One of them picking the winning lottery ball. The other scoring goals in the playoffs, all while the best player in the past, I don't know.
Who?
Connor McDavid.
Best player in 20 years.
Yeah.
Has a PCL injury.
And is doing nothing. Well, no, he's playing putt-putt inside with a knee brace on.
Rehabbing. Barry Trotz, you know, I just kind of realized. Like,
that
you
was
know
Barry Trotz, by the way.
The hockey players have all their nicknames.
Ebbs.
Like Ebbs there.
Ebbs, yeah.
I feel like Barry Trotz already has that. Like Trotz. That sounds like it's short for something that hockey players would call.
Like Trotland.
Yeah. Like,
yo, Trotz.
If there was a player or a coach on that team called Trotland, it would be Trotz.
Could you even shorten that up?
No, you would have to go to Trotzy, probably.
Or Rots.
No, you go to Trotzy.
Trotzy?
Yeah. If
you would make it longer?
No. That happens. If in hockey, in your nickname, if your real name is really short, you add the Z at the end. Like when Derek Roy was on the team, he would have been Roy-Z. For sure.
Yeah.
You can't make it Roe.
No.
Just take the Y off.
You definitely can't do that.
That sounds stupid.
Yeah. You definitely just throw a ski at the end.
Yeah,
just hope for the best.
Trotsky.
Yeah. Nick Erie here. We got Joe DiBiase here live in studio. Sports Talk Saturday. We were just talking some Masters coverage. We'll talk a little bit more at noon when Brian Koziel joins the program. But I want to talk a little NHL. You heard from Barry Trotz there, the coach for the New York Islanders, who are, again, through Robin Leonard, seemingly looking like a team that could really make noise.
You know, you made a comment about former Oilers playing well all over the place. We got former Sabres like doing really good in the playoffs so far to start here.
You know, it's such an interesting conversation. Someone was kind of on Twitter the last 24 hours, and there seems to be a lot of animosity towards Robin Leonard because of his success, which I think is kind of weird. It's like, who cares? You know, Robin Leonard was not a good trade. It was set up to fail. in Buffalo with Robin Leonard.
He would have had to have been a Vezina nominee for that trade to really...
to ever really pan out. Yeah. And listen, I think we all... I think if you ever watched Robin Leonard, you knew that he had the capability of being the goaltender that he's been showing now. To me... It was always, just please, if you could get him to the playoffs, he'll be a good playoff goaltender because you don't have to worry about a shootout.
Right. That's a good point.
Or, just
not,
worry about the
or not get to shootouts.
Yeah, right. So who cares?
I mean, yeah, like, it's not, I'm not even all that surprised by this season that he's having.
Neither am I.
930 save percentage. Okay, that's like Vezina caliber. Mm-hmm. Now, he didn't play enough games to really get Vezina consideration. If he had done that over 70 games, he would absolutely be a Vezina candidate, if not the Vezina winner. So those are the kind of numbers that he put up in the time he played this year. When you look back at his Sabre career, it's not all that different. He had one bad year for the Sabres in 3 years. Last season was absolutely bad for him. 908 save percentage. He was letting in goals left and right. Bad goals.
A lot of the stories you heard, too, where he's drinking Jack and Coke during practice.
Right. Last year, brutal.
You know, though, doesn't that speak to your coach a little? That's going on? I feel like
maybe
he's got problems. There's no doubt there was some underlying issues with Robin Leonard.
Well, how do you know that they didn't know it and that they were trying to work on it? It just wasn't in the public eye. I think that could have been the
idea that you're on the ice doing that during practice.
Yeah, if that's true, then yeah. But just looking at what he did on the ice for you, his first two seasons, a 924 save percentage for you, albeit in 21 games because he was hurt that year, and then a 920 save percentage in 60 games after that. Like, those are solid numbers.
I think what
those are numbers
are
that
about,
even Carey Price has trouble consistently maintaining.
Well,
in Montreal.
What people are pissed about is the fact that
How he let the goals in.
Nobody would care.
People got mad about and the trade. That's how people got mad at Robin Leonard. It's how he let goals in.
Yeah.
He would make an insane save and then let in an easy one. When at the end of the day, it's the same as if the hard one and made the save on the easy
That's
one.
True.
At the end of the day, statistically, it's the same. And the trade. Like, that's why you got mad at him. You look at how the Sabres goaltenders did this year.
Well,
not nearly as good as what Leonard was in his first 2 years.
That's part of the reason I think there's this hyper focus on Robin Leonard right now is the lack of consistency you got from your goaltenders after December. Like when you going into December, Robin Leonard wasn't doing his thing quite yet by December. I think it was really January, February where he really came on for the Isles.
I think he started off super hot and then he kind of tailed off
and then he came back. So nobody was really talking about Robin Leonard then because your two goaltenders, people here were talking about when is Ullmark really going to just take over? Like, when is it going to be Ullmark's time?
I was applauding the Sabres for the cap hit that Hutton was on.
Yeah.
Like, it's still not a bad cap.
No, it's not, but
you're not getting the production.
You're not getting the production that you were getting in the first part of the season. Right. And I think a lot of that has to do, and by the way, this game last night, did you watch any of the Sharks in Vegas game?
I watched almost that entire game.
That end of that first period where they score three goals in a 2-minute and 6-second span, that goal was unbelievable. The third goal.
Joe Thornton.
Yeah, Joe Thornton's goal that tied it up. And not only that, but they basically take the lead on that goaltender interference from Couture. Otherwise, like, holy cow, San Jose's up 2-0 in that series if that game goes their way. But I think obviously the series that everyone's basically talking about now, which I think maybe we're not lending enough attention to that St. Louis series, St. Louis Winnipeg, with St. Louis up 2-0 now, after 2 in Winnipeg, which to me was pretty, I think a lot of people's early pick for the Stanley Cup, I know beginning of the year was Winnipeg, because Winnipeg came off that great run last year, their young goaltending, Patrick Laine, but that's the thing, like, Patrick Laine's had a weird season. And talk about a guy that either scores 5 goals or can't score for 15 games. It's the weirdest thing with Patrick Laine. But I think at the end of the day, what it's coming down to is the Blues goaltending. Like, the Blues have found new life with this young goaltender that they have.
Jordan Binnington.
And the idea, first of all, he should not be even be close to in the conversation. I just want to go out in the limb now. He should not be in the conversation for Rookie of the Year.
Let me ask you, why do you think that, though?
Not enough. It's just not a big enough sample size.
Okay, I agree with that.
Like, that's the only reason why. Strictly the only reason why. He is absolutely deserving of it. I just don't think he should be in the conversation considering that Rasmus Dahlin played.
Some people think he shouldn't be in the conversation because of how old he is. Mm-mm. I think he's 24. Now, to
I don't
me,
care about that.
Like, I think
you're a rookie.
Ideally, at some point, like, Panarin won Rookie of the Year when I think he was 26 or something, or maybe he was 25. At some point, I think you need to set an age limit, but there is no age limit. So to me, like, especially when hockey writers, who are the type of characters who will do this, you have parameters set in front of you, and they try to go outside of that and say, "I'm not voting for him, but he's 25."
Mm-hmm.
Well, No, that's not how it works. Like, he's a rookie.
He's a rookie.
You're not deciding what if he should be eligible. You're deciding under these parameters that he's eligible for, is he better as a rookie than these other guys? I agree with you, though. Like, the reason he shouldn't be even a nominee
just because
is he only played,
I think, 26 games, 30? Well, not even
I think his
games.
Record was 26-5.
Okay. So
which
he
is
played,
insane, but yeah, 30, I think 30 games, maybe, roughly.
He absolutely is deserving to be in the conversation in the top five guys. I don't even think you can put him in the same conversation.
It's not really just him, though, too. Like, I've watching the Blues over the past couple months as much as I have, not a lot, but a little bit, They run, they're three lines deep at forward. Their blue line is actually sneaky good. Like, it's kind of veterans, like Bomi
Sears
at the
end.
And now
they've got a first, second line
O'Reilly
center.
O'Reilly playing with Tarasenko and Schwartz is super good. Yeah. And, like, all the things we look back on with O'Reilly here in Buffalo, like, it was the skating not being up to par. It was the comments at the end of the season.
Right.
I think something we've really never talked about was who he played with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we talk about that with Eichel a lot.
What, you don't... him on a line with Zemgus Girgensons wasn't a recipe for success?
Well, like, he played with Kyle Poso more than anybody over those course of those couple years.
Poso and Scott Wilson
but
last
Poso
year.
But was supposed to be the guy that could finish.
Sure. And to be honest, like, Poso, like, his numbers weren't
awful
those first couple years.
Point,
but that might have been a lot of what O'Reilly's doing.
That's true.
O'Reilly never played with
numbers
great players
could
here.
Absolutely be O'Reilly's
sure.
doing. Yeah.
So, to me, like, another excuse that you could put into why O'Reilly wasn't... Like, I don't even want to say wasn't amazing here because he was still putting up 60-point seasons.
Yeah.
But I think a big reason why you look at why he was a 77-point player this year, you put him with Vladimir Tarasenko, and that looks like a real elite line in the NHL. Like, O'Reilly can be a number one center in
the
league.
If you pair him with a guy that is an elite. That's the problem.
And he didn't have to be our number one
center.
Did not
have an elite-level wing. And listen, I mean, right now the Sabres have one elite-level winger, and that's Jeff Skinner. And is he going to be around is the question. Because the problem becomes for this team is with a really good elite still under 23-year-old center in Jack Eichel, they don't have another elite-level player.
The problem
other than Rasmus Dahlin on the end. So it's good. Here's the thing. Most teams, if you were to say you have one elite-level forward and he's your number one center and one elite-level player on the back end and he's your number one defenseman and can move the puck, he can play defense, he can skate, he can do everything that you want. Like, I think if you're building a team, like, those are probably the two positions you say, I need to be able to check off the box. I need elite-level center, young, and elite-level defenseman, young. Boom, check the boxes there. But they have almost, like, the drop-off from Jack Eichel, if Jeff Skinner's gone, is, and listen, Samson Reinhart had a great year. I think he's taken the necessary step. And if he continues to build the way that his point totals have built over the last 3 years, you're talking about a top 20 winger.
Yeah, you are.
You are.
But see, the problem is the Sabres don't really have the bodies to be able to afford to have that super line like the Blues have right now. Like, the Blues can put their three best forwards on one line. Why can they do that? Because
they've
they have
depth.
Six or seven other guys that can play and score on
even,
other lines.
You mean without Vladimir Sobotka? They'd have that? Without Sobotka?
And Berglund, too, by the way. I forgot they lost him.
Yeah.
Like, Braden Schenn's down there, David Perron, Bozak, Robert Thomas, who's the prospect that we all wanted originally from the Blues, Pat Maroon, Steen, Barbashev. Like, they have a bunch of players on their forward groups down below that allow their top players to play together. And the Sabres, and this was partially on Phil Housley for not recognizing this, they played their top three players a lot together last year. It was Reinhart, Eichel, and Skinner. Like, that was a line for a big chunk of the season. Really, the Sabres could not afford to do that. And we saw it in their secondary scoring. There was no secondary scoring because when Reinhart was playing on that top line, your second line suffered. And that's where I think my biggest disconnect with what Phil Housley was doing was. Because you had a line that was going well when Pominville was up there, and you didn't recognize that when that line was together, that Reinhart was still producing on a second line and creating, running a second line.
Right, on a high level.
Right, so, and he kept putting Reinhart back on the top and let the other three lines die. So to me, like, your goal in this offseason needs to be where you can get the rest of the forward group together, where you can have Reinhart, Eichel, Skinner as a line. And they can't afford to do that the way the roster is set up right now. Like, they need to take a page out of the Blues lineup.
To be honest with you, like, I think at this point, like, Sam Reinhart can run his own line. Get him. And
no, I agree with that, but I want them to at least be able to have the option to do that. Like, they couldn't even do it at all because the rest of your three lines just would give you nothing.
Absolutely.
If Reinhardt wasn't on one of them.
But you know what the problem is a lot of young guys that could have been helping midway through this season. Victor Olofsson, maybe the most important one. Victor Olofsson
should have been.
Had he been in the NHL this year, he would have scored 20 goals. I'm pretty convinced about that. With his shot, if he was on Eichel's line, with Eichel setting him up, 100% he's scoring 20 goals. If he plays 60-plus games, he's scoring 20 goals.
But see, I don't think he... I think he needed some sort of development down there.
Sure,
because
he did.
I didn't like what he did in the preseason or what I saw from him, the little I saw in camp and development camp. So...
That guy's got a shot.
Yeah, he does. Like, to me, if he would have been the player he was at the end of the season for 60 games, yeah, that's a 20 goal player. I don't think you were getting 20 goals out of him this year, just because I think if he was here right away, he wouldn't be the same player.
You mean like Tage Thompson?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And if you brought him up halfway through the season, I don't know if there would have been enough games to do it.
Yeah.
But next year, like, I would peg him for 20 goals. I might not give him a lot of assists.
No, me either.
But
sort of like a Skinner year.
Yeah.
But, and he's not scoring 40.
He should be in your top six.
Yeah.
And I think with, like his release and how he's come along as a player, I predict 20 goals for him next year.
803-0551, 888-552-550, your numbers to call. Talking NHL playoffs, a little Sabres talk as well. We'll talk a little bit more about the series that everyone's seemingly talking about, that Columbus Blue Jackets-Tampa Bay Lightning series. When we come back, Brian Koziel at noon to talk Masters as well. You're listening to Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR.
There's no doubt about it, in my opinion. And not only does Sundqvist have a couple of goals, but they've been relentless on the attack. They've been winning puck battles and skating really, really well together.
Now a pass ahead for O'Reilly. He comes in. Wade shoots. He scores! O'Reilly! And the Blues take a 4-3 lead.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Nick Erie here. Joe DiBiase in the studio. Got Derek Kramer on the board. We were just in kind of an interesting conversation that stemmed
shouting
off of... it wasn't shouting. We were just having an interesting conversation, and it all kind of stemmed from my idea. And Chad Dinaminisis. God, I know Chad. I should know how to say his last name, and I can never do it. That sounds right,
I wonder
though.
If Chad knows how to say his last
name. I don't think he does. Anyways,
we
Chad's a great guy.
We had him on to figure that out before.
I know, and I don't remember stuff. Like,
clearly.
I think you got it, though.
Dinaminisis. I might have. I really might have gotten it right.
I think you nailed it, and you just don't realize
Anyways,
it.
He deserves me to be able to say his last name because he's great, first and foremost. But Chad, this week, put out a piece on Die by the Blade that the Sabres absolutely 100% should not trade the 7th overall pick, and I completely disagree. Which is fine. I just completely disagree that they shouldn't trade it.
I think that he's got a point.
He does. No, 100%. I think that there are scenarios where the 7th overall pick should absolutely be in play if you can get a caliber player of a Braden Point or Kasperi Kapanen. Like, either one of those two players.
I think you're overvaluing how good
maybe.
I don't think Kapanen's that good. I think Kapanen's very good. I don't think he's as good as a Braden Point.
No. I agree with that. I think both guys, though, honestly, if I'm being honest, I think both guys really benefited from having elite level talent around them that they were playing with. That's why their numbers, like, is Braden
Here's the
Point,
thing, though. You should be able to put them with elite level talent.
I agree with that.
If Braden Point's a 93-point player with Stamkos and Kucherov, what is
at
he with?
70?
What is he with Eichel and Skinner?
75? I mean,
I give him 80.
Yeah, I'd take that.
He's but really good. It's not like he's a product of those two.
For me, my point was the number 7 pick should absolutely be in play if a team like Tampa Bay is looking to shed some salary. And one of the things we were talking about is Ryan Callahan, because he's kind of an albatross at this point. 5-point what? Next year?
5.8
with 1 year remaining on his contract. You definitely would not buy him out. But if I'm the Sabres, I'm absolutely using Ryan Callahan as a pawn in a potential trade for a guy like Braden Point. Because not only can Tampa Bay right now not afford to give Braden Point the $7 to $8 million he's going to be getting per year, maybe more, to be honest, as an RFA. So if you're Tampa, what's the best thing you could do? Well, the best thing, in my opinion, is to get a defenseman like Rasmus Ristolainen to be on your third pairing.
First off,
that's 5-point whatever coming back too.
I know.
If Ryan Callahan is involved in a trade here, I'm asking to bump it down from 7 to the other first round pick.
Yeah. Or, like I was saying, use it as leverage to say, give me your top prospect.
Here's the thing. You could
top
do that,
prospect,
but I don't know.
Why don't you just use the 7th overall pick?
But, yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if Tampa has
because
a
you get the best of both worlds. Then you get a prospect.
Tampa
you get
Tampa has,
you end up with Braden Point.
I don't know if Tampa's got the guy.
Yeah,
that's even
we don't know if
that.
Tampa but has that player.
I don't. If, even if they did, the reason I wouldn't like that idea is because we have seen over the past what 5 years, really ever since Tim Murray got here, we have seen.
I get it.
How much of a hindrance on the rest of your cap and the rest of your roster can be if you've got. Just
they've got
contracts
another pick.
Weighing you down.
They've got another first round pick though, and we were just talking about the ability to potentially buy out Kyle Okposo after the 2020 CBA comes out, and you're talking about potentially being able to get him off the books for free, basically
if
like you did with Chris Kerloff.
If there's compliance buyout,
right?
Which
so you would think that there is, right? So if you could, and even if not. After 2020, you spend a second-round pick, and you get Kyle Okposo off your team into Seattle. Like, that's what your hope has got to be. Either way, I think you look at Kyle Okposo with options to get that salary off your books by the end of 2020. So I don't think you should look at your roster or your salary cap situation as being really a difficult one to work around. I absolutely think you can sign Jeff Skinner at $8 million, $8.5 million a year, and still sign another guy at $7 to $8 million, and then still have money left for Rasmus Dahlin. Because you have Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen coming up through the system. I think he's going to be a very good player in the NHL. So you got a goalie in the works on a rookie contract that you'll have for 2 to 3 years. I think you'll have your top defenseman making. Dahlin's probably going to make $10 million a year.
Sure, but we're like 2 3 years from
right.
That.
But so I'm just saying like you. But they need to keep that in mind when they're building this roster, because if they're going to add a third $7+ million player a year and a guy like Braden Point or Kasperi Kapanen, who is absolutely going to get that wherever he goes, whether or not he's good enough to get 7.5, I think no matter where he goes, if it's in Toronto or if it's in Buffalo or anywhere else, he's going to get 7.5 to $8 million. It's just based on his age and his production. So like for me, if you have to take Ryan Callahan back in a trade for 1 year, I would absolutely 100% do it if it got me a first-line player. 100%.
But you're not just taking Callahan on. Like, you are also you're giving up two really valuable pieces. And, like, I like the idea of the trade. I just don't like the idea of putting that much money into it. Because if you put $5.8 million from Callahan coming back your way, like, that basically equals out what you were getting in Ristolainen. But that asset goes from, I don't know, what's Ristolainen, a B-plus player to like an F that you're paying for? Like, whatever you think Kyle Okposo is at this point in his career. Like, he's not good. He's not worth the cap hit at all.
No.
But ideally, like, if you ignored salary for a second, he's actually exactly what I want in a bottom six player.
You're telling me to ignore the most important aspect.
No, I know. But if we just ignore for a second, like, he's a bottom six player that's going to give you double-digit goals. Like, okay, for whatever you think he is, Callahan's contract is much worse.
It's bad, yeah.
What did Okposo,
at this
as a player,
point in his career,
what
absolutely.
What did Okposo have this year, like 13, 14 goals?
Yeah.
Callahan has 14 goals in his last three seasons combined.
Yeah, he has not been good.
He's not only not good, you can't have him on your team.
That's the kind of contract that would sink a team, yet it doesn't in Tampa.
Because they have... yeah, I know. I don't know how to put this, really, but like just the idea to me
because
overall.
Because Nikita Kucherov is making beans compared to what he's capable of.
Sure. I think you're just about to get out from under all these
2014,
bad contracts.
2015, Callahan had 54 points, which is crazy.
Right. Well,
it's crazy.
He was in his prime then.
29 years old. He hit the 30s with Callahan.
Really hard. But like to me, you're just about to get under from all these bad contracts. Like George's is done. Molson is over now. You've got one more year of Bogosian. You've got one more year of Scandella. You're working through the Okposo contract as best you can here. And I know it's only for 1 year, but I'm trying to make the playoffs next season. And I just watched St. Louis dump off their dumb salaries with Sobotka and Berglund onto me by taking a good player back that way. So, like, do I want to do any teams that same favor again?
I mean, you're doing them a favor, but you're also getting one of their best players.
I'm already giving them enough value where I think I shouldn't have to do that. I think if I'm giving you seven
if
overall
it's the difference,
and a second pair defenseman, I don't think I need to do
if
that.
If it's the difference, I'm absolutely doing it.
I think that's where I draw the line.
I think it's – I would ask to not give up seven. If I'm giving up a first-round pick – it better not be seven if I'm taking Ryan Callahan's contract.
Okay. I mean, I guess that's fair.
I've got a real... We got to get to a break.
Yeah, we do.
But I've got a... I don't want to call it wild, but it's probably reckless. Reckless idea
that
the Sabres maybe should think about.
I like that. We'll talk about it after we talk to Brian Koziel, who's going to join us next here, talk a little more Masters here on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.